This, in itself, would not be particularly significant were it not for the fact that the arguments which Dr. Crafts presents to these organizations to gain their support are entirely socialistic. Nor are these confined to Dr. Crafts. Other leaders of the movement also advocate the same principles. Dr. Crafts went to the General Assembly of the Knights of Labor at Indianapolis last month to get the delegates there to endorse the petition for the passage of this Sunday bill. He has referred to this in his speech here this forenoon, and has made a portion of his speech to them and to the locomotive engineers a part of his speech here. A report of his speech at Indianapolis was printed in the Journal of United Labor, the official journal of the Knights of Labor of America, Thursday, November 29, 1888. He said to them there, quote, "Having carefully read and reread your Declaration of Principles and your Constitution, and having watched with interest the brave yet conservative shots of your powderly yet intemperance and other great evils, I have found myself so closely in accord with you that I have almost decided to become a knight of labor. Myself. If I do not, it will be only because I believe I can advance your principles better as an outside ally." End quote. The following question was asked by one of the knights, quote, "Would it not be the best way to stop Sunday trains to have the government own and control the railroads altogether, as the Knights advocate?" Dr. Crafts answered, "I believe in that. Perhaps the best way to begin the discussion of government control for 7 days per week is to discuss this bill for government control on one day. If the railroads refuse the little we now ask, the people will be the more ready to take control altogether." The Knights of Labor advocate the doctrine that the government shall take control of all the railroads in the country, and hire the idle men in the country at regular railroad wages, and run the roads, as it now runs the Post Office Department, without reference to the question whether anything is made or lost by the government. This is what gave rise to the above question. Dr. Crafts proposes to play into their hands by making the bid for their support, that if they will help the Sunday law workers get government control of the railroads one day in the week, then the Sunday law workers will help the Knights to get government control every day in the week. Another question that was discussed both there and at the Convention of Locomotive Engineers at Richmond, Virginia, was the following, quote, "Will not one day's less work per week mean 1/7 less wages?" The response to this was as follows, quote, "As much railroad work as is done in 7 days can be done in 6 days, and done better, because of the better condition of the men. And on this ground the engineers would be sustained in demanding, and if necessary, compelling, the railroad company to so readjust the pay schedule that the men will be paid as much as at present." End quote. That is to say, Dr. Crafts and the Sunday law workers propose to stand in with the laboring men to compel employers to pay 7 days' wages for 6 days' work. This is made certain by the following petition to the state legislatures, which is being circulated everywhere with the petition for this bill. I got this at the Chicago Convention. Dr. Crafts distributed the petitions by the quantity there, and he is doing the same at the convention now in this city, quote, "To the state senate or house, the undersigned earnestly petition your honorable body to pass a bill forbidding anyone to hire another, or to be hired for more than 6 days in any week, except in domestic service, and the care of the sick, in order that those whom law or custom permits to work on Sunday may be protected in their right to some other weekly rest day, and in their right to a week's wages for 6 days' work." End quote. Now a week consists of 7 days. A week's wages for 6 days' work is 7 days' wages for 6 days' work. This petition asks the legislatures of all the states to pass a law protecting employees in their right to 7 days' wages for 6 days' work. No man in this world has any right to 7 days' wages for 6 days' work. If he has a right to 7 days' wages for 6 days' work, then he has an equal right to 6 days' wages for 5 days' work, and to 5 days' wages for 4 days' work, and to 4 days' wages for 3 days' work, to 3 days' wages for 2 days' work, to 2 days' wages for 1 day's work, and to 1 day's wages for no work at all. This is precisely what the proposition amounts to. For in proposing to pay 7 days' wages for 6 days' work, it does propose to pay 1 day's wages for no work. But if a man is entitled to 1 day's wages for doing nothing, Why stop with one day? Why not go on and pay him full wages every day for doing nothing? It may be thought that I misinterpret the meaning of the petition, that, as it asks that nobody be allowed to hire another for more than 6 days of any week, it may mean only that 6 days are to compose a week, and that it is a week's wages of 6 days only that is to be paid for 6 days' work. That is not the meaning of the petition. It is not the intention of those who are gaining the support of the Knights of Labor by inventing and circulating the petition. Dr. George Eliot, pastor of the Foundry Methodist Church in this city, the church in which this National Sunday Convention is being held, the church that is now festooned with 14 million petitions that they haven't got, festooned, at least partly, with 17,200,000 times multiplied cardinal, Dr. Eliot, while speaking in favor of this bill this forenoon, was asked by Senator Call these questions. Do you propose that Congress shall make provision to pay the people in the employ of the government who are exempted on Sunday, for Sunday work? Mr. Eliot. I expect you to give them adequate compensation. Senator Call. Do you propose that the same amount shall be paid for 6 days' work as for seven? Mr. Eliot. I do. For the reason that we believe these employees can do all the work that is to be done in 6 days. And if they do all the work, they ought to have all the pay. There it is in plain, unmistakable words, that they deliberately propose to have laws, state and national, which shall compel employers to pay 7 days' wages for 6 days' work. This is sheer socialism. It is the very essence of socialism. No wonder they gained the unanimous endorsement of the Convention of the Knights of Labor, and of the Locomotive Engineers, and the Socialistic Labor Union of New York City, by proposing to pay them good wages for doing nothing. I confess that I too would support the bill upon such a proposition as that if I looked no further than the money that is in it. But this is not all. The Knights of Labor not only accept the proposition, but they carry it farther, and logically too. This principle has been advocated for some time by the Knights of Labor in demanding 10 hours pay for 8 hours work, virtually 2 hours pay for doing nothing. The Christian Union and the Catholic Review propose to help the working men secure their demanded 8-hour law, and then have the working men help to get the 6-day law by forbidding all work on Sunday. Dr. Crafts and Dr. Eliot go a step farther, and propose to secure the support of the working men by having laws enacted compelling employers to pay them full wages on Sunday for doing nothing. But the Knights of Labor do not propose to stop with this. The same copy of the Journal of United Labor which contained the speech of Dr. Crafts, contained the following in an editorial upon this point. Quote, why should not such a law be enacted? All the work now performed each week could easily be accomplished in 5 days of 8 hours each if employment were given to the host of willing idle men who are now walking the streets. It is a crime to force one portion of a community to kill themselves by overwork, while another portion of the same people are suffering from privation and hunger, with no opportunity to labor. The speech of the Reverend Mr. Crafts, published elsewhere, furnishes an abundance of argument as to why such a law should be put in force. End quote. So when the Sunday law advocates propose to pay a week's wages for 6 days' work of 8 hours each, because all the work can be done in 6 days that is now done in seven, then the Knights of Labor propose to have a week's wages for 5 days' work, because, by employing all the idle men, all the work that is now done in 7 days can be done in five. And as Dr. Eliot has said, quote, if they do all the work, they ought to have all the pay. But if a week's wages are to be paid for 5 days' work of 8 hours each, that is to say, if 2 days' wages can rightly be paid for no work at all, why should the thing be stopped there? If the government is to take control of the railroads all the time in order to pay 2 days' wages for doing nothing, and if the states are to enact laws compelling employers to pay employees 2 days' wages for doing nothing, then why shall not the government, both state and national, take possession of everything, and pay the laboring men full wages all the time for doing nothing? For if men have the right to 1 day's wages for no work, where's the limit to the exercise of that right? The fact of the matter is that there is no limit. If a man is entitled to wages for doing nothing part of the time, he is entitled to wages for doing nothing all the time. and the principle upon which Dr. Crafts and his other Sunday law confreres gain the support of the working men to this Sunday bill is nothing at all but the principle of downright socialism. There is a point right here that is worthy of the serious consideration of the working men. These Sunday law workers profess great sympathy for the laboring men in their struggle with the grinding monopolies, and by Sunday laws they propose to deliver the working men from the power of these monopolies. But in the place of all these other monopolies, they propose to establish a monopoly of religion and to have the government secure them in the perpetual enjoyment of it. They may talk as much as they please about the grasping, grinding greed of the many kinds of monopolies, and there is truth in it. But of all monopolies, the most greedy, the most grinding, the most oppressive, the most conscienceless the world ever saw, or ever can see, is a religious monopoly. When these managers of religious legislation have delivered the working men from the other monopolies, granting that they can do it, then the important question is, who will deliver the working men from the religious monopoly?